Hey there, Internet. My name's Jack Packard. I Sinistar. I hunger. I live here for The Escapist.
Different than The Hobbit.
Not that I'm aware of.
I don't know. It's something Smaug would say.
It's not something Smaug would say. It's something Sinistar would say from Scud, the Disposable Assassin.
I'm Nicolandro. I will never understand Jack references. I'm also the editor-in-chief of The Escapist.
This week, we're going to talk about the games we've been playing, including the newest DLC and the oldest point-and-click adventure game. Then, over in the topics, we are going to talk about PlayStation shutting down its PlayStation 3 and PS Vita store. So sad, the memories. What does that mean for games? What does it mean for games preservation? What does it mean if you still own a Vita like I do? I'm gonna turn it on later. It's gonna be great. We're gonna see if it works still. So hello and welcome. This is The Escapist Show. So, Nick, I'll start off with a game that I've been playing last week, because I played a couple and you only played one. The first game I would like to talk about is Undermine.
I've heard all about this. I think I've gotten like 6 press releases for it in the past week.
It wouldn't surprise me. This is the first game that I have played via Game Pass because I said to myself, it's a roguelite. It's a little bit of a twin stick brawler. And it looks like it's right up my alley. It's probably not a game that I would have purchased for myself, but because it's part of my subscription service, I said I'll give it a shot. And you know what? It's not bad. That was my cat, if you could hear him. Could you hear that?
Yep.
That's my giant cat wanting to come in my office. This is different. Usually Cookie wants to come in. We'll see if Biscuit wants to come in.
Maybe Biscuit's trying to get away from Cookie.
Hi, what is it? Yeah? Okay, you can come in. Oh, here we go.
Jesus Christ, that cat's so big.
This is my giant cat. This is Biscuit. He's giant.
He's looking at you like, are you recording again?
Yep, this is what I do, Biscuit. Are you happy now? You happy that you're in here? All right, I gotta go. Thank you for visiting me.
Omar needs to add a sound effect of like a brick hitting the ground.
in weight, Biscuit is half the size of Cookie. Like, that's how big Biscuit is. Biscuit is a giant,
30.
Giant cat.
30 something pounds?
He's about 30. Well, he's 25.
Jesus.
He's 25 pounds, yeah.
My God.
And Cookie is 50 pounds, yeah. Yeah. Catnip, what are you going to do?
Catnip.
Catnip? No. Oh, you want to see something that big? He's not declawed either. Oh, man, he could do some damage on catnip. So Undermine, this is where we were. We were just talking about the first game we were playing. Undermine, it's not great. It's not necessarily engaging. It's good though. Like, it's a good game. It's like, it's got a solid, what it has is a,
it's not great.
It's great.
Not engaging. It's good though. Wait, that's, you know, if you ever do a written review on the site, that should be your verdict. It's not great. It's not okay either, but it's good.
No, it's better than okay. It's good. I would say it's a good game. Okay is below good. Okay, good, great. Under okay is, you know, bad, garbage,
poor,
waste of time.
Right.
Yeah. So, like, it's tough because it's a roguelite. It's a game in which you are expected... So it's a roguelite. The premise is pretty fun. There is an evil wizard who has like some haunted minds, and you are one of several hundred thousand of the common folk who get placed into the mine to, you know, mine it for gold and other resources. So a fun little premise. The combat is not terrible. You do most of the fighting with your pickaxe. You can, you know, slash at people and you can throw it. You get certain power-ups. Those power-ups do sometimes... No, they never do interesting things. They do, you know, it's... The reason I say it's not engaging is because it lacks a certain personality. You know, one of the reasons why I enjoy something like Risk of Rain or The Binding of Isaac is because it has a very unique point of view and an art style that is all of its own, boogers and monsters. And so that can really help you get through the sometimes very difficult loop that is a roguelite. And Undermine doesn't have that personality to get you to replay constantly, constantly, constantly. Like, I haven't even beaten the first boss. You know, obviously it's a tough game, but I've gotten to the first boss a couple times, haven't beaten it yet, and I really don't care to. But again, it's on Game Pass. Didn't cost me anything extra to download, get like 10 hours into, and decide it wasn't my thing. And so that's why it's like, eh.
Your cat back there, I think he's stuck.
Biscuit, are you stuck? Are you stuck? Yeah? What are you doing back there? What are you doing back there? If you got in, you can get out, you dingus. Who's more disruptive, the big dog or the big cat? Are you coming?
I'm just watching him go back there. Yeah. He just keeps going back and forth. Like, I don't know where to go now.
Yeah. Well, you're back there now. That's fine. So I guess, like, that's the thing. It's fine. It's a perfectly adequate game. Hoo-hoo.
That cat's funny.
So, Nick, what have you been playing last week?
Yeah, so over the past month or 3 weeks, I've been working on Doom Eternal's The Ancient Gods DLC. The part one. Part two just came out, so I'm actually not on that one yet. I'll be starting that up on Monday for the editor's hour. But yeah, it's like honestly, it's like the first DLC that I've gone back to play in any game in a really long time. Just because I'm kind of like Yahtzee. Like, when I play a game, I'm done with it. I don't really want to go back to it, kind of thing.
Yep.
But I kept hearing how it's like, I'm going to get roasted for it, but the Dark Souls of Doom DLC or whatever, you know? And I was like, okay, that sounds like something fun to stream, something really challenging to play.
We're not using those words anymore. It's played out.
Well, that's what people called it. And it wasn't the media either. Or maybe it probably was. I don't know. Omar will probably find a link somewhere who said it was.
But it probably was, or maybe it wasn't. I don't know anything about it. Yeah.
Pretty much. Anyway, so yeah, you know, it's a fun, short little DLC. Very challenging. Like, I know we both talked about how Doom Eternal was pretty rough in some of those later stages. Mm-hmm. The DLC is like 6 hours of just relentlessly kicking your butt. Just nonstop. Like, if you go look at the streams, I am just in the zone shooting shit for 6 hours straight.
Well, then, to me, the problem with Doom Eternal was all of the systems that were in there. You know, like, it wasn't just shooting. It was the grapple hook. It was the way in which you needed to get ammo, the way in which you needed to get health, the way in which you needed to manage all of these different systems. And the one thing I heard about the Doom DLC is it added more systems into play.
Yeah, I don't think part one did, but I know part two adds something new. With like a hammer or something like that, a new weapon,
maybe,
or
that's
whatever.
What I was hearing about, yeah.
But yeah, now part, like, I think part one was like the best of Doom, also paired with like the worst parts of Doom Eternal, because I think one of the biggest issues I've had with Doom Eternal is just like the level design. Like, some of the arenas are, I mean, a lot of them are, you know, are just, they're like hard to read sometimes. Like, there was times in the in the stream where I'd get stuck in a corner and just get wrecked, you know. And,
sure.
If I recall, like, and it's been a long time since I played the, you know, Doom, the redo of Doom.
Doom the Doom.
Doom 2016. Yeah. I just felt like things flowed better in that game. I wasn't having to always ponder around for ammo and everything, and like, while it. While having to do that, like, makes everything more frantic and crazy and eternal. Like, you're always on edge. Like, I gotta get to the next chainsaw. I gotta fire the guy so I get more shielding back. I just, I preferred the loop of 2016 when it was a bit more simple than, you know, if I just, It can be simple and challenging at the same time. Once you start adding all this other stuff, then it just gets stressful and not really fun.
That's exactly how I felt about Doom Eternal. Like more stressful than fun. Like I really appreciate like its vision. It's like difficulty vision. I respect it. Not for me.
I had a really good time with part one, and I'm really looking forward to play part two. There was some, like, the last boss fight section, and I don't like these spirit things they've added. Those are really annoying. So basically, you have to kill the host of the spirit, and then you have to kill the spirit using a very specific weapon to do it. One of the issues I had with, like, the last boss fight is, like, I'd kill the spirit, I'd run out of ammo to finish it off with the plasma gun that I need, and then it immediately spawn in another enemy. That spirit would take over that, and I got to do it all over again. While getting attacked by everything else, and then I'd finish off some other shitbag demon trying to stick me to the floor, and then he'd come back and respawn in right away. But I still love it. It's Doom. It's still so much fun. Part two. Tomorrow. Be there.
Ooh, be there or be square. The other game that I've been playing after last week's Slightly Something Else podcast, Yahtzee and I were talking about point-and-click adventure games. It reminded me that I have a point-and-click adventure game downloaded on my computer. I've had it downloaded on my computer for a long time now, thanks to GOG.com, which is Indiana Jones and the Fate of Atlantis, which is an old Indiana Jones point and click adventure game, and I've been playing it, and it is a ton of fun. It's Indiana Jones, he's fighting Nazis, he's solving mysteries, he's flying from continent to continent. It's super great. I'm having a really fun time. It's a very simple point and click adventure game, but it's great. It's a great amount of fun.
Yeah, it's been fun watching our throwback streams, because they're playing games that I missed out on as a kid. They went back and played Tomb Raider, and then and I was like, oh wow, I'm thinking about it now. Like, I want to take part in throwback and load up Jack and Daxter again and stuff. Ratchet and Clank.
Sometimes the old things hold up. Thanks to GOG.com. Thanks to GOG. Something like this, a very old, PC point-and-click adventure game, runs smoothly and easily without having to download any other software. Just click play, which is part of the magic of good old games. And so, yeah, it's been great. Like, you can't really, like, I can't give an in-depth review on a point-and-click adventure game because it's a point-and-click adventure game. But it's Indiana Jones. It's fun. Just to hear, by the way, the janky ass MIDI version of the Indiana Jones theme during the intro, worth the entire game. Beautiful time.
You remember when computers had disk drives and we didn't have to deal with installers? My computer didn't have a disk drive on it anymore.
Why would you need a disk drive? That's silly.
I don't know.
I do have a disk drive. Well, I have like a USB disk drive in case I need to like play a movie on it or something. So.
All right. Well, the SpongeBob Collector's Edition that I have toiling away in my closet. No, I gave it away now, but it was in my closet. They gave me a PC version of SpongeBob. I'm like, what do I do with this? It's a disk.
It probably came with a download code.
Probably. Some kid has it now, so good for him.
Oh, good. All right, Nick.
Yeah.
I present to you my PlayStation Vita.
I never owned one of those.
This is one of my favorite gaming consoles ever.
Really?
I say that unironically. I put so many hours into this bad boy. All of my Binding of Isaac time, all of my Spelunky time was on this. I loved my Vita. I know so many people loved their PlayStation 3. The stores are now being shut down. They don't want to support these stores anymore, as there's no more customer base anymore. I get that.
I think the PS3 store shuts down in July, and then the Vita store in August.
Sure. And so download all of them that you can.
Interestingly, this happened. So I went to record Sacred Symbols Plus with Colin Moriarty yesterday. And literally right when we were about to start recording, they got the email that the Vita store was closing. They did not communicate with Vita developers before this happened. And so his company, or the company that he partially owns, Lilymale Games, was working on a Vita game. And like, they were literally just sent a Vita development kit like a week ago.
Gotcha.
They bought it. they bought and were sent a Vita development kit a week ago. So now they have to, and they went on Twitter and said, we have to cancel the game now for Vita. So,
well, Jesus, to be fair, if they were developing a game for the Vita, not the smartest business model.
There's quite a few people that were still buying Vita games, like Limited Run Games was still doing Vita games and all that. Still really shitty, like, to be supportive of the developer kit. You just bought it and then all of a sudden, like, oh, this is worth nothing now.
Listen, even in the Vita's heyday, there wasn't a lot of people playing the Vita. Let's be honest. Let's be honest here.
So, yeah, you know, the whole thing, Sony's just been weird to me. The past couple years now, like, you know, we went through PS3 and that was a really like kind of crappy time for Sony as like PR wise, because like, oh, we're gonna overcharge for our console, and then, you know, all games, you know, the sell is so much better, but all the developers are having a hard time developing for it, blah blah blah. Then they really turned things around like midway through that console with a lot of great exclusives and everything, and then you head into PS4 and they have all this great PR, super friendly to indies, and super good, like, I guess, treatment of customers. And now we're back at PS5, and it kind of feels like we've gone backwards with Sony again. We're like, they feel like arrogant PS3 era Sony again.
Well, they're much like the PS2, they're coming off a pretty hot high right now, so they get to be, or they feel a little more arrogant. That makes sense. But I suppose, like, as far as shutting down the stores are concerned, are they obligated to keep them running in perpetuity? Obviously
we've
not.
Had that conversation before on this very show.
Right. They're obviously not. That being said, you know, shutting down the store also means shutting down any sort of patches for games that you've bought. It means shutting down software updates for the console itself. It means like basically like saying we are officially done with this. And for those, like, I still love my Vita. I'm looking at it now thinking I'm gonna fire that bad boy right up. It hurts a little bit, but they're under no obligation to keep these stores up. I mean, they're under no obligation to keep the store up for as long as they did.
Well, I think it highlights a wider industry issue of preservation in games. Like, that's, you know, that's what I've been thinking about. Is like, you know, I want to stream Jack and Daxter. Well, now I can't really. I mean, I guess that's not a good example because it's been re-released a billion times. But a lot of like PS2, PS3 games, you can't even find them anymore, you know, unless you have the system to do it. So I thought when Sony announced this stuff, I was like, oh, okay, maybe they're just not communicating it yet. Maybe they're going to have like a universal store to get all this stuff finally. Doesn't sound like that's the case yet. I don't know.
I would assume they don't want to keep the PS3 store open, or they don't want to let you buy PS3 games digitally for your PS5, because that means they won't be able to re-release it later and charge you full price. So, well,
I mean, there's that, but one of the things I think they maybe aren't talking about, and this just speculation, is, you know, they've been pushing PS Now a bit more. And PlayStation Plus by putting like kind of targeting Game Pass people with that, by putting brand new games on PlayStation Plus right away. So I don't know, like, maybe the future game preservation is through streaming. And, you know, I can see that happening.
That's not games preservation. That's like
not games preservation, but it's allowing people to continue to play those games.
Sure, that's not games preservation though. Like having a single copy of something on your hard drive does not mean you have a backup. Having two copies on two separate devices is what a backup is, and that's what games preservation is. Giving us the ability to download a game and play it whenever we want. Hey there, GOG.com. Ching! That's games preservation, making sure it's able to be played on the latest hardware. That's games preservation. What Sony is doing is chopping off the store so they'll be able to resell it on later consoles.
Yeah.
That's par for the course. That's their prerogative as their business. Absolutely.
It just shows you how forward thinking Xbox is now, though, with their backwards compatibility efforts. I mean, they brought so many original Xbox games over to Xbox. Almost the whole 360 library is available on Xbox. You know, they get it. Nintendo and Sony are way far behind on that stuff. Nintendo's even worse about it because they'll go after ROM sites for even hosting that stuff. Sony doesn't really seem to care too much. But I think, you know, it's funny. Sometimes it's funny, though, like when this stuff happens, is like people get all up in arms about Sony shutting down the stores and, you know, not preserving games. But like there's nobody like advocating for this stuff all the time. Developers included, like we're not pushing them to do better about preserving work. I don't think they think very many people care.
Well, my guess is if I were to be generous, I would say the vast majority of gamers don't care.
Yeah, I'd say so.
I think that's the cold, hard truth of the matter. Most of the time, I don't care. I want to play the new game on the new system. It's very rare that I want to look back. And when I do look back, like I have my collection of NES games and I have my way that I'm able to play NES games and Super NES games. I have my cartridges still. And I have my systems that I'm able to play on. So I think for most of the time, we don't care. And it's not something that those of us who do care even a little bit of the time have any influence over because of this giant tidal wave of apathy that is coming from other people. So I think the people who are on games preservation are preaching it 100% all of the time. And I think that Sony just don't give no fucks, because if they wanted games preservation, then they would allow you to play the game whenever you wanted, and they don't want to do that.
Financial incentive isn't there. That's why I think like streaming, like cloud, putting that stuff on the cloud, is there a financial incentive? Because that's going to get people to subscribe to a cloud service for the nostalgia factor of playing their old games again, you know?
Yes, but I think things can go on and off of cloud services just as easy, man.
They can, but I think like today, like you just said, you don't think most gamers really care about that stuff. Well, I mean, most people have moved to a digital format now and don't want piles of games in their house.
Right.
You know, physical media has just gone out the door whether you like it or not. So I personally hope they bring those games back like Xbox has to their store and let you download and buy them again as digital copies. It's not the most secure way of preserving games, but I mean, at least it's there. Or uploading a huge database of these games to the cloud and letting it go that way.
It would be nice even if they had like a channel, like a retro channel. Like, let's say you have a PlayStation Monthly, right? It's PlayStation's Game Pass. And they say, oh, for an extra $2 a month, you get access to retro games. You know, the PS3 titles that aren't on the store anymore. Sure, like, why not? It would be a way for them to make money. But they also have to put money into those services.
And Nintendo's kind of already done that, right? With their emulator systems through the Switch and everything.
And then Nintendo picks and chooses what games will be available at what time. And sometimes they'll pull a game and sometimes they won't give you the game we want. Earthbound. Everybody wants to play Earthbound, Nintendo. Why won't you let us play the freaking game?
Yeah.
We just want to play the game.
So, yeah, I mean, I think people need to make more of a stink about it if they want games preservation. But I think you're absolutely right. Like, the non-online audience, like, a lot of people don't get on the line to talk about games or think about this stuff. They just buy, you know, the next Call of Duty and the next FIFA, and that's it. So, like, people, especially kids, like, they don't even know about these games of the past, really. So, you know, who's really thinking about it besides, you know, old farts like us that are like, well, I want my Jack and Daxter back. Give it to me.
Give me my thing. I want it back. Right. And really, the next generation of gamers is going to have grown up with nothing but digital games. They won't care about it at all. And so, really, it's just just, it's old man shaking fist at cloud. That's all we're doing here.
Yeah.
Shaking our fist at the literal cloud, Nick. Do you understand what a great pun that I unintentionally made right there? That's the situation we're in. We have to understand that gaming in general is the largest entertainment industry in the entire world. And those of us who are asking for any sort of product preserved and available if we purchase it once in perpetuity, we're not even a fraction of a fraction. We are so small, we don't matter.
Or stop making ROMs illegal for games that you don't even sell anymore and aren't making any money off of.
But I might sell it one day again, and it's mine, and I own it.
Well, see, that's where the argument for games after a certain amount of time should go to the public domain.
Oh, I agree with you. That was me being, you know, Konami or whoever.
Yeah, I know, corporate. Yeah. Well, eventually we'll completely remaster this 40 years from now
and charge and be able to charge you full price. So no, it's mine.
Yep.
Though, we just did, we just got a fancy re-release of a previously very hard to get a hold of game. Yes, I'm talking about the 1992 NES version of Noah's Ark. Just came to Steam. You know what I'm talking about? The platformer?
No.
Where you play as Noah and you have to collect two of each animal?
My gaming history starts with like games like the incredibly difficult Hercules game and
this was definitely before your
Toy
time
Story.
But this was an NES game published by Konami, one of the very few religiously themed games to get past Nintendo's notoriously tough censors, where you play as Noah and you collect two of each animal while platforming and shooting like little seeds at things. It's on Steam now. I'm super excited. I'm playing it this weekend.
I'm sure Sony's keeping an eye on that online blowback from this, but you know,
it's going to be a fart in the wind. It won't make a big difference. I think those of us who are interested in games preservation, we've lost already.
We'll see, because I've seen a lot of people saying like, man, I'm going to spend, you know, a couple $100 on picking up games on those stores before they go offline forever. So
even better. This is even better for Sony then. Yeah, then shut them down.
They're taking the playbook out of Nintendo. Let's put the Mario collection on the market for a few months and then take it away arbitrarily just because we're dickheads.
This is, we're like, do you remember that gag in The Incredible Kimmy Schmidt that they were making fun of the Washington Redskins football team? And they said, just change it to something else offensive and people will buy all the merchandise just to burn it.
Yep.
And then, of course, that happened with Dr. Seuss, right? Like the same thing happened. Dr. Seuss decides not to...
I didn't know those books existed.
No one knew those books existed. Yeah, and so they bought... People mad that they were stopping publishing books that no one's read bought other books and they made a bunch of money. Like, people are dumb. It's great.
and then they changed the name from the Washington Redskins to just Washington.
The Washington football team. Oh, I love it. The Washington football team. I think that's so great.
You couldn't think of anything creative that wasn't racist?
White people are the worst. You need to know that.
I just thought that was funny. Like, wow, what an awesome name. Washington.
By the way, I know this
they
is
didn't even,
a
they didn't even like They didn't even like put a Washington face, the symbol. It's just Washington. Yeah.
No, this is probably going to be cut, and this is a tangent, but I, as someone who's not a sports fan, I love that. Like, I want, you know, the Seattle Baseballs.
Seattle Baseballs.
Right? Like, the Portland Hockey Pucks. Like, that's how I want all teams to be named.
Seattle created an awesome NHL team called the Seattle Kraken.
Actually, I do like that, too.
And their logo and their jerseys are fucking cool.
I believe that.
I'm going to be a bandwagon of them just because I like their jerseys.
It's a great creature, you know, awesome. But I like dumb, simple names. So yeah, name your team the football team. I think that's great.
Well, apparently from slightly something else today, anything that's simple is better for you.
It's really true. Like, he asked me to come up with a two-syllable word, Nick. That's not going to happen anytime soon. Come on. Okay, so like, I guess this is the point, is like, is it a big deal that they are shutting down these stores? If we live in a democracy, the answer is no, because not enough people care. Does it mean anything for games preservation? I also think the answer is no, because those games weren't being preserved anyway. They're not able to be preserved outside of that system. And if you still have that system, you still can play those games. It's not a big deal. I guess, I don't know. To me, this isn't a big deal, though I see my Vita right there and it's like, ooh, maybe, yeah, maybe I'll check out some.
I mean, I'm kicking my, like, I think, it, you know, if they never release these games again, yeah, it's a big deal. Like, mm-hmm. with how companies like Microsoft are treating backwards compatibility, I just don't see Sony not utilizing that entire catalog for something.
Right.
That's why I think it's going to be on the cloud at some point, or they'll merge their entire digital store together so they don't have to create a new store every time they could put a new system out. Again, something that Xbox did. It's a universal store across all their platforms.
Yeah, really nice. We really would like that. Yeah.
So I think that matters. But like, when I also think about preservation, I'm kicking myself in the ass for, like, you know, I sold my copy of Lord of the Rings Battle for Middle Earth 2 back in the day, and now you can't even buy it anymore because the license is expired.
Sure.
And now it's worth a lot of money. And I also think, like, of movies, and I found out recently that the gold box collection of, like, the Star Wars movies that are unedited are worth a fuck ton of money now. the VHS box of, like, the original Star Wars movies that are, like, the original movie, not the edited one that you can only get now.
Well, even that one they changed when Han shot, but yeah, and unfortunately in those, like, they were still they were 4x3, so it's not perfect. The perfect one is there was a very limited run of a Laserdisc version of Star Wars that's still the original theatrical cut. That's like the highest quality you can get. Or on certain websites that I can't say for legal reasons, you can find things that are despecialized editions of Star Wars, where they it's a great group of fans who have cobbled together from all these high quality sources. I can't say the name of it, but it's despecialized.
That's the only reason I haven't bought the 4K versions of the original Star Wars movies, because, like, I don't want to watch the edited versions.
Right? You don't want to watch the versions with all the crap in it. And,
and
you know, that's a whole different conversation, because, like, the original creator wanted to change it, and he has the right to change it, but we all also want our original stuff. We want that preserved. Art is weird. Art as business is weird, Nick.
Yep. Games industry needs to figure out when these things go into the public domain. It'll make life easier for everybody.
Well, as long as Disney has their ways, the answer will be never.
Never.
Yeah. Never, never, ever, ever. Makey money nowy. That's my Disney impression. Oh, gonna get that money. Oh, gonna get that sweet cash. Oh, you want this? I'll cut a bitch.
You grow up thinking Disney's so innocent, and then you learn.
Yeah, you learn. Hey, kid, want some candy? Oh, this is free. You want some candy? You want some more? You gotta pay for it.
As your parents are handing over $40.
All right, great. Well, that was our discussion. Kind of went all over the place. Hopefully that made sense. Thanks, Omar. Once again, I've been Jack Packard, a semi-professional video game enjoyer, here for The Escapist.
I'm Nick Landry, the editor-in-chief of The Escapist.
Hope you become an Escapist Plus member. Maybe a YouTube subscriber. You can help us out on YouTube, too. Better do it. That's all good, bitch.
Better preserve our content.
Gotta preserve it.
YouTube.
Right? Bye.